Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and the first thing we're going to talk about in this show is embroidery machines. We're going to talk about that part of your machine that many of us quilters have and maybe haven't used. And so I am really delighted to have Sue O'Vary here because she is pretty much an embroidery expert. And I got a chance to meet Sue this fall and we have just hit it off. And she's going to give us some tips about how to get friendly with that part of our sewing machine. Hi, Sue. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you for having me, Pat.
You know, you've been digitizing for, you told me, like, you know, like 20 years. This is a long time. Did you that in your sort of corporate job, right?
My corporate jobs were primarily design, but anytime you do any design work from start to finish, from sketch to production, you know, you're always thinking about the artwork on there. And so I would work really close with the art team. And oftentimes I'd get out my computer and show them exactly how I'd want it. So yeah, I did use the digitizing in there. But mostly I started my career at Busch Gardens, which, if your listeners are familiar, it's a theme park here in Tampa Bay, Florida. And I did costumes for several years, and I worked as a designer for a leather manufacturer where we did all kinds of small leather goods for Hartman and Toomey. Mostly our biggest customer was Verizon, and it's kind of cool. I designed the very first leather cell phone case for the original iPhone.
So, oh my gosh. Do you have one? Did you keep one, Sue?
I do. I do have one, and I had designed these metal clips for them and have all the logos. I post it often just to kind of remind me where I've been and, you know, what I've done. Yeah, it was fun. And I finished my career in my corporate life designing for Harley Davidson ladies wear. And I was a technical designer, and that was really great. But then I had a little girl, Heidi, and
yes.
I thought, I'm gonna officially do my own business. And that's where my business started, was about 7 years ago.
And were you doing the sort of work on home embroidery machines while you were also had a corporate job? Did you do it for fun or business?
I did do it for fun. I did it a little bit for business, had my products sold throughout the world and online. And I always kept my hand in the home sewing industry because it's different from the corporate world. You know, it's definitely more for fun. And yeah, I always did that for a hobby, and it's still a hobby.
Oh yeah. You're like me. It's like, it's work and it's a hobby. It's like,
exactly,
I'm going to relax and go sew because
exactly.
We're nuts. We're all nuts here. Now what I want to do is focus our talk on people who have these embroidery units and maybe tried them once. You saw it working in the class and really, you know, don't know how to be part of that world. One of the things that I've noticed is you have your own terminology for embroidery. And one of them is the word hoop. I have never used the word hoop until I met embroidery people. What does that mean?
Well, the hoop is definitely an integral part for our machine embroidery, and the term in the hoop is very popular. The acronym is ITH, in the hoop, and it basically means that the project is stitched and it comes to life while it's inside the hoop. Your fabric, your stabilizers, whatever it is that you're working on is all done inside the hoop. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I was at a convention where I was like the only non-embroidery person teaching. You know, I don't know why I was there, but it was fun. And I just learned so much because I don't have that exposure. But what I found out is that you embroidery designers, just make adorable things. They are so cute.
Oh, well, thank you. It is definitely a passion. My goal is usually to look at something and become inspired and say, how can I figure out a way to create that inside the embroidery hoop? You know, like whether it's these little key covers I have, they actually slip over like a house key. And then I have luggage tags and mug mats. And I would say one of my favorite projects, is like a little zippered purse but on the front, and the zipper's all done, Pat, inside the embroidery hoop. Can you believe that?
Oh my goodness. Wow.
It's amazing. And then the front of the purse looks like a clock. So it's, I call it the countdown clutch. But those are kind of projects that when you're done, every time you make that project, it's consistent. And, because the stitching's all done in the machine for you. And it's really fun to watch them come to life. And they're fast and they're fun. And most of my projects can be done between 5 minutes and 20 minutes. And you're done.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's fast. And then you can book them out and whip them out, and they make great gifts. Or a lot of my customers will take the finished good and then they'll sell it on Etsy or a different little bazaars. It's neat to watch another entrepreneur create something and make some money too and have fun.
And it's mostly having fun is really important. Let me get some tips from you for I have embroidery units. What are the top couple of pointers that we need to know about to get started?
Okay, I would say the first thing when you look at your embroidery unit and the hoops, you'll want to know what is the sewing field, what's the largest and smallest your machine can do. There's lots of hoops, and you can have a hoop the size of your car, but at the end of the day, your machine will recognize a certain sewing field. And the most popular are 4x4 and 5x7, and some of them, Pat, go up to 14x8. It's crazy, but I would say that's a really good pointer. And then, another one is, I get this question all the time. Sue, how do I get my designs from my computer to my embroidery machine? So that's another good tip, good thing to learn. Your user manual or your local dealer will share that with you. But I help with that as well on my website. And most of them transfer with a USB, like a flash drive. So that's another one. And then I would say one of the most important things is once you've got the design in the machine and you're ready to go, how do you get your fabric in the hoop, make it straight, what kind of stabilizers to use too? So those are, I would say, three important things that are good basics.
Yeah, so those are the things to sort of get the base knowledge of those before you fire it all up and try to run a design. Now, tell me about stabilizers for this, because I use some things for bag making, but I know that there are, what are the best things for working with on embroidery?
Well, just like every other hobby, machine embroidery has its own set of stabilizers. And I sometimes, Pat, I'll compare it to the cosmetic counter at a department store. There's, there's five or six of them, and they all have foundation. They all have eyeshadow and lipstick. So there's lots of opinions and there's lots of brands. But at the end of the day, you want to use the right stabilizer for your fabric. And there's really three basic ones. There's a cutaway, which I guarantee, if you look inside your husband's, one of his polo shirts that you've purchased off the rack, it'll have a cutaway left over in the back. And then, tearaway is another popular one. And that's good for a lot of in the hoop projects. We use that and, towels. And then the last one I would say is washaway. And have you ever gotten a really beautiful linen and if you look at the wrong side of it, you don't want to see a big glob of heavy stabilizer or something that you'd use in a purse or so we use a washaway stabilizer for that. And if you kind of narrow it down to the basics, then you're always safe.
Now, do you have any of that on your website somewhere? Do you have some tip area?
Yeah, we do. Actually, we dedicate the blog to that. So it's SueOverydesigns.com/blog, SueOverydesigns.com, I should say, /blog. And we post things on thread and stabilizers, and we'll always reference what the newest free designs are too, and which is great for a newbie because you hate to spend a lot of money, testing out a different designer's product. And you always check out the free portion of a website, and then you can get the freebies and try before you buy.
That's a good idea, because all of these designs are things you have to download and, there's a lot to understand. It's a little different than making a quilt or making a bag. So,
And it's good to have the support so that you can go back and ask the designer questions.
you know, one of the things that we're doing is talking about storage solutions. And when you go into new, like a new area of your hobby, like if somebody were to start collecting stabilizers and hoops and all this stuff, what's a good way, you know, or how do you personally store this stuff or suggest we do?
Ooh, good question. I would say for hoops, it's just kind of silly, but those little hooks that you can stick to your wall, like to hang pictures. But mm-hmm. I use them for hanging hoops. They're fantastic. It gets them out of the way. It keeps the inner hoop and the outer hoop together. So that's one thing I do for hoops. For threads, the best thing is to go to your fabric store, buy a quarter of a yard of vinyl. And you know what, Pat? This is a good tip for regular thread, too. Mm-hmm. And take that quarter of a yard of vinyl, cut it into 2-inch strips, and then wrap the thread with that vinyl, and it'll actually cling to itself. And the advantage is, because if we leave our thread out, the sun mm-hmm. and the dust, kind of like they're attracted to thread. So
yes.
If you wrap it with the vinyl, it'll protect it, and it'll give the shelf life of it a lot longer. And stabilizers, you know, the best tip I can give is, you know those racks you get for the back of your door to hold your shoes?
Uh-huh.
Those, that's what I put my stabilizer in, because it comes in tubes and it fits right in there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, perfect. Perfect. Perfect.
Yeah.
Gosh, you know, we have like just a real short bit here. Tell me about quickly your club that you have.
I have a new club. It's called In the Hoop Club. And if you go to the website, it's inthehoopclub.com. We create exclusive monthly projects for our club members. And we also have bonus seasonal projects. And the best part is that there's a video to go along with it. So not just do you get the design, but you also get the like a huge tutorial of instructions and then a video. You get to watch me teach the project, which is
And Sue is helpful. Delightful. You will want to watch Sue. You are entertaining and fun and energetic and cute as a button. So
Thank you. It's easy when you're in love with what you do, right?
Absolutely. Sue, this has been so much fun. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And you have a lovely creative day, Pat.
Thank you. This is American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. Visit Sue at SueOvaryDesigns.com for all this information. We'll be right back. That's it.
Okay.
Yeah. And it'll air on the 18th.
Okay,
and
on the
18th.
I'll be
in Seattle.
All right, my friends. Well, I will be sharing this, and I just can't thank you enough. I really appreciate this opportunity.
Oh, well, thank you. We'll talk again soon.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. Like American Patchwork and Quilting on Facebook for daily quilting inspiration, tips, and giveaways. Find us at facebook.com/APQ Magazine. See our editors share their tips, ideas, and techniques by visiting allpeoplequilt.com and clicking on videos.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ Magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and this show is brought to you by Moda Fabrics. So you can go check Moda Fabrics online and visit the bake shop, the Moda Bake Shop, for all kinds of really fun projects. Now, one of the things that really excites me about other people's work is, it sounds kind of funny, but when their work is really different than mine, I get really excited about it. I like to see quilts that are done in a style that's different than mine. I just love then finding out about that maker and that designer. And today is one of those occasions where I'm going to talk to Nancy Purvis about her work, because when I visited her website during some sort of a tour, I just loved everything she was doing. And she has a book out about her work. And so this is really exciting. Hi, Nancy. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Pat. Thanks for having me.
You know, you told me that you've kind of fairly new to the quilting part of things, but when did you first kind of find quilting?
I started quilting about 4 years ago. So it just happened to be that I was looking for something to write a blog post on, and my friend had mentioned modern quilting to me, and I didn't know what that was about. And I had a one-year-old at the time, and I decided that that would be a great opportunity for me to try my hand at quilting and to have blog content. And from there, it just led on more quilts.
just a little something to do, right? You know, we just thought, try that out.
Yeah, I like to do lots of things, and so it was something that I had never tried before, and it looked like mm-hmm. a good challenge, and so I pulled out the machine and I taught myself how to quilt.
You know, what I really like about your style is, to me, it's a very clean lined, a lot of geometry, and it's a lot of, so I like the layout and how you approach things. Do you have like an art background or an engineering background?
I actually do not. I don't. I took art classes in high school and in college, but I didn't go to school for that.
Well, so, you know what? It doesn't really matter, does it? That, you know, but it's sort of interesting when I look at people's work. I think, oh, you know, this the layout and how you balance things is really quite lovely. And so, tell
Thank
me a little
you.
Bit about your quilts. I mean, when you first made your first quilt a while back, how has your style evolved?
It's when I first started quilting, I would kind of follow somewhat like patterns. I kind of was seeing what other bloggers were doing, quilt bloggers, and mm-hmm. I had decided like that's what I was going to do, was just kind of follow kind of like, I guess, what everybody else was doing. And then during that time, I just started to develop my own style, and I really like to draw and I really love design. And so I just kind of put the two together and started to create my own quilt patterns.
And so do you draw kind of like actually in a graphics package or on graph paper?
I work mostly on graph paper. I've taught myself how to use Illustrator, but I'm still mm-hmm. pretty new with that. So mm-hmm. I typically use graph paper and pencil.
Yeah. You know, it's sometimes it's fun to do that. Even if you do use online, you know, software, sometimes it's fun just to get it out and sketch it with a pencil, you know, see
yeah.
where it's going to go.
Yeah, I really love that connection that I have with the paper and the pen, and I just can't get that with my mouse.
Right. You know, I tell people, Nancy, that when I'm, like, when I sketch, it's not real yet. I can, like, play and with paper, but once I go on the computer, this is, like, the real deal. Like, I'm all serious, you know, okay, let's get this thing done. So it's, you know, it's definitely a different feeling. You know, what you do a lot on your website, and you know, chat with people. And you told me that one of the things, you know, you'd like to do is encourage people to try, just like you did. What do you tell them?
Oh, I just try to be everyone's quilt cheerleader if I can. I don't like any kind of negativity towards quilting, because I feel that quilting, it's an art form, and I feel like we can't really tell people to stay within a certain box, like they need to perform a certain way. And I feel like that kind of really limits a person's creativity. So mm-hmm. I try to just encourage people to just try something new or to follow their gut, even though it may not be very mainstream or very accepting. Just if you love it, you do it. It's your work. It's not Sarah's work. It's not Sally's work. It's your work. So you need to put, like, you just need to not focus on what other people mm-hmm. have to say or think. And you know, I'm human, and I succumb sometimes to the negative thoughts in my head. But really, I just like to push those things out, because I feel like when I do that, that's when I truly shine.
And it is such good advice. Excellent, excellent advice. So tell me, how did the book come about?
Well, the book came about through Interweave had contacted me and asked me if I had ever considered writing a book. And my answer was no, because I had never really ever thought that would ever, ever, ever happen. I mean, I had only been quilting for about a year and a half. And so having a book was something that was never on my radar. When they had approached me, they were like, well, we need a theme. I was like, oh my goodness, really? I don't know. But as I was doing that, I started to think about like what I wanted in a quilt book, and I just wanted something really different. I didn't want like kind of like the same patterns to be showing up throughout my books. I wanted a variety, and I wanted it to appeal to a wider audience. And so that's how the book kind of came about.
Well, I love the whole approach of it. I mean, I've gone through it, and there are quilts I want to make. And I mean, that's always the exciting part when I see, you know, open a book and I'm like, oh, I want to make that. But I love that you have tips in your book. Like the one I'm looking at right now is showing this just amazing pair of, I would call them fashion slacks, that's all triangles. mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about that, how you incorporated some of these things in your book.
Oh, yeah. So I just gather inspiration, and I use on my phone a lot. So I take a lot of pictures, and I gather that all up, and I just I hold on to it. So that way, whenever I'm having a creative rut, I just can go back to that and use that as inspiration. And I try to teach people in the book how to find inspiration so that they can go out on their own and be able to hopefully come up with a new quilt pattern that's very unique to them.
It's wonderful. It really is. Your book is called Quilting from Every Angle, and there's a gorgeous geometric on the front of it. I do want to get in one. You have a tip. Or a process that you use that I want you to share, because I want to know more about it. You tell me that you like to glue baste. Can you explain that?
Yes, I love glue basting. So what it is you use Elmer's school glue. It's the white kind. And you use that in place of pinning. And I don't use it all the time, but I do use that instead of pins. In fact, I think I only used a handful of pins in my book. So all the quilts that were made didn't have any pinning. And you can see that a lot, majority of the points do line up. And so I just use glue in place of a pen. And you just basically put a few dots in your seam line, and you match up your seams, and then you heat set it, and then you're good to go.
Okay, so you're heat setting it. So it's not going to shift at all, because basically you're drying, letting the glue dry. So
correct. Oh. The one tip that I do have for glue basting is when you do apply your iron onto the fabric, make sure that you apply it directly in a vertical motion. Like, do not horizontally move your iron across the glue, because then I have found that sometimes even though I got the seam to match up, when I went to go set it, the iron could possibly shift the fabric, and then you go and find out that it's not lined up. So just to gently press the iron in a vertical motion right onto the fabric creates a, like, perfect points. It's awesome.
I this is kind of new for me, and I think it's brilliant, because people have a hard time getting those kind of tough intersections. I would imagine this is super helpful. Oh, you're such a smart girl. It is.
It's not for everyone, and I think a lot of traditionalists would love to continue to use their pens, and especially if you're very good at nesting seams, and I don't know if glue basting theory is
at all that necessary. But mm-hmm. I don't really follow rules, and so I will press wherever I want to press my seams, mm-hmm. and so I don't really nest a whole lot. So I use glue basting to get accurate piecing, and it's very, very helpful. If you have a problem with lining up points or getting those seam lines to match, glue basting is amazing for that. It's
well,
also
Nancy,
really
this
good
has
for
been...
line binding.
This has been so wonderful. I really appreciate you coming on and sharing about your quilting and your book. Tell us your website.
It's owensolivia.blogspot.com.
Yay, then come out and visit you. And you do a lot on Instagram too, right?
I am very active on Instagram as owensolivia. So I update Instagram more frequently than I do the blog.
Yeah, great, because I watch you there. Well,
thank you
so much.
Thank you so much, Pat.
This is American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm Pat Sloan, and we'll be right back after the break.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Once you've determined the block placement in a quilt, take a picture of the layout with your phone or digital camera. Look at the picture to make sure you still love the layout, as having a different perspective can sometimes make you see things you haven't before. Once your layout is final, refer to the image as you sew to ensure the blocks remain in their desired positions.
Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg. Join me in 2015 for a brand new video series called Show Me How, brought to you by Baby Lock. Each month, I'll show you how to complete a simple project from start to finish, learn new techniques, see tips, and sew a great project. Visit allpeoplequilt.com/videos to watch.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Now, I have been following Anne Marie Cheney's quilting website for quite a while called Gen X Quilters. And I am really happy to have her on the show because she does a lot with samplers. And I think samplers are something that are not timeless and also super popular right now. So we're going to learn a lot about them. And thanks for being here, Anne Marie.
Hi, Pat. Thank you so much for having me today.
You know what? I want to tell you that when I read your bio, you know, I went out and read your about page, and I just had to chuckle because you come from an engineering background, and you were talking about having, you know, your first jobs where you worked with all men, and how interesting that was at that, you know, time frame, being the only lady on the job. And I had the same thing because I worked in computers. So I could really relate. Did you sew at all when you worked with your engineer guys?
Actually, no, not at all. I didn't start sewing until much later after that. As a child and a teen, my mom repeatedly asked me to learn to sew. And I flat out refused. I was kind of more into sports, a little bit tomboyish with the engineering thing. And it wasn't until I was getting ready to start a family, which I think a lot of people who start sewing as adults kind of turn to it maybe at that point in their mm-hmm. life. That was when I started looking into learning to sew and learning to quilt.
There's so many people like, I want to make a quilt for my baby coming or somebody else's baby, or just, you know, I have a family now or I have a home and I want to make a bedspread, you know, that all
right.
just sort of starts it. So you were a rebel. You were like, I'm not touching that machine when you were a kid.
Absolutely. I refused to learn how to cook. Also, I didn't learn how to cook until I went to college.
So it was just kind of anything that had something to do with being domestic, I just wanted to stay away from that. And I ended up getting into that a little bit later in life.
Yeah. Well, I have to tell you, I used to take the quilts in to show my staff because, you know, I was the boss. So they had to tell me they liked them. So I had a little bit of
That's a good way to start a fan base, right?
That's right. That's right. You guys will like this. And they go, oh, yeah, it's great. You know, that's
yeah, I think it was my first job was in the trucking industry. I worked for a truck brake company. Oh. I was a mechanical design engineer for them. And I think the reactions of some of those guys that I used to work with are pretty interesting when I tell them what I'm doing now. But strangely enough, it all relates really well. There's a lot of attention to detail in quilting, and I get to use my analytical side. So it all marries really nicely, and I enjoy that I get to add in some creativity to that as well. So it's really worked out.
Yeah, I mean, and you have, you know, you designed things, so now you just design them a different way. They're pretty instead of metal.
Right. Yeah, that was pretty interesting when I first started quilting, too, because I couldn't follow a pattern for the life of me. Oh. There was just something about the way that I'm wired that I wanted to tweak this or change this. You know, there was always some little part of the pattern that I would kind of veer off course with. So I think maybe it is that designing is kind of in my blood.
Yeah. Oh, that's so funny. It's I love your tagline, you know, quilter, engineer, and mom of three. It's like, there you go. You can't get away from that part of the brain. It's always going to be there. So when did you just start writing, you know, online? When did you develop your website?
That was about 5 years ago. I actually started quilting about 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And for those first 5 years, I was just kind of learning. And as I mentioned, I wasn't able to follow a pattern from the very beginning. So it was about 5 years ago that I decided to kind of take the next step with that and, you know, formalize some of my designs and start writing to, you know, kind of chronicle, you know, the projects that I was making.
So it was more sort of to document what you were doing?
At first, but, mm-hmm. you know, it since I had been designing from the very beginning anyways, it very quickly turned into, you know, writing my own patterns and developing it as a business.
Yeah. Yeah. So you, what I've always sort of known you as a core thing that you do, because you do a lot of different things, but one of the core things that I've always known your work for are samplers. Have you always been attracted to quilts that have lots of different blocks?
You know, I think if we all look back at the different paths that we take while we're learning to quilt, your interests kind of change as you get to know the hobby mm-hmm. better and maybe acquire more skills. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't say I was necessarily automatically gravitated towards samplers. I know I did a sampler very early on when I first started sewing. I had a friend who, they had a quilt club at her work during their lunch hour, and I kind of tag-teamed onto that class. She would pass me the notes when she came home from from work, and I made my very first sampler that way. It was just a small table runner, but it exposed me to my very first class, and you know, each of the blocks used a different technique, so I thought that was really neat that, you know, you didn't have to invest a lot of time or money into making a whole quilt this way, but you kind of got to learn, you know, all these different techniques in a small project. But that was like my first experience at samplers. And then I would say it just kind of evolved into this obsession, if you will.
An obsession with samplers. So what do you think about, the appeal of it, you know, that's sort of timeless. I mean, I started my, you know, a lot of learn to quilt classes. It's a sampler from way back. Mm-hmm. So what is appealing about them?
Well, I think there's kind of two different facets of that. One is the visual appeal. I think when you look at a sampler, it's exciting. You know, every place you look, there's something different to look at. And that only speaks for people who are just admiring the quilt. For the person who is actually working on the quilt and making the quilt, it's a whole nother experience because not only do you get to enjoy it visually, but as you're going through and making these samplers, you get to experience different techniques. A lot of samplers end up being skill builders. Mm-hmm. And as you, start maybe with some easier blocks and continue working through the sampler, the techniques get more difficult, or maybe you get to try all new techniques, things you've never tried before. And mm-hmm. so that's what I really enjoy, is kind of that exposure to trying something new and having a chance to, practice piecing skills and practice these skills that we've used before, but maybe in a new way. So it's really, I think it's something exciting that as you work on those blocks, you're learning something new and you don't have to make 40 of the same block.
Right. It's like, oh, that's, I think people can get bored. Some people love it. They love the repetition. They don't have to think. They don't have to make any decisions, of a limited mm-hmm. color palette, same block. But I could never get bored with a sampler because you just always keep moving.
Right. And, I agree with you. There's a time and a place where I enjoy having those quilts that are just a repetitive pattern, the same thing. Sometimes you just need to sit down and hear the hum of your machine.
Mm-hmm.
But there are
yes.
other times where that sampler, you want to learn something. I guess that's where I try and take my samplers, is in that learning aspect by exposing you to something new.
So let's talk a little bit about what you have available on your site, because you have some amazing information and things for quilters. Like, I'm just looking at your quilt block library. Tell me about that.
That is a collection of free tutorials. And the quilt block library is just a landing page. It's a place where you can go if you're looking for ideas, where you need maybe to make a B block, or you're just looking for an idea for your next quilt. It's a collection of all these free tutorials, and by no means are they all by me. They're from many different places where I've found different designers offering free block tutorials. And it's just kind of a central home that you can go to look at them. And if you click on the picture of the block that you are interested in, it will take you directly to that free tutorial.
Ah,
it's been pretty inspirational. A lot of people kind of go there just to get ideas.
Yeah, and it's nice because you have a tiny little thumbnail, so you can sort of scroll it and look to see what appeals to you. And then you have one called Patchwork Auditions. What is that one about?
That was a series I just did this past year in 2015. And what I wanted to do with that one was just to explore different coloring options for mm-hmm. blocks we have all seen a million times. So one of the blocks that I chose was a soft hue star. That's a block we've all used a lot. We've seen it a lot. Usually you kind of get ingrained into seeing it pictured or colored just in one way. Mm-hmm. So what I try to do is just to change up how you're coloring that. Maybe switch where you have your background fabrics and your color feature fabrics, or change the number of colors that you're using. It's a very visual type activity. So I provided some coloring sheets, and people can go in there and print off a coloring sheet and experiment with different ways to color the blocks. And in the quilt that I made, I ended up making a few of those from my coloring page. And then it's just a fun way to explore things you've seen many, many times, and trying to mm-hmm. give them, kind of a new, fresh look, just a different way of thinking about something you've seen lots of times.
Yeah, it is amazing to me how a block could change just by where you put the fabric. It's like, and sometimes I just, you can't even tell what it was. They can look so different, right?
Yeah. I mean, sometimes just changing the way you color it makes the block look unrecognizable. They look completely different. Another one that I did an example with was the churn dash block. And mm-hmm. that's one that is very familiar to many people. and you can change the way you color that, and you end up with the block called the Greek cross. I don't know if you're familiar with that one, but they're the exact same piecing. You know, they have the same number of half square triangles, and there's some rectangles in there. Those blocks have completely different names and are known as completely separate blocks, but in their construction, they're the exact same piecing. So it's just kind of interesting to play with some of those. It's just fun. It's something that I enjoy.
Yeah. I mean, it is fun, you know, to just not be so serious sometimes and think, you know, I have to do, you know, this or this, because that's the way it's laid out. That you could just take, I think if people went there and looked at what you provided on the patchwork auditions and sort of took it and actually explored it in fabric, because some of those are done with diagrams, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, because it looks different. You know, you have the diagram there and it kind of gives you the initial idea of what it's going to look like. But then when you bring it to life with fabric, that also gives it a whole new personality as well.
So we're going to take a little break here, and then we're going to come back afterwards. Okay, Amory?
Yes, that sounds great.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To save time, Rotary cuts several layers of fabric at once. To prepare a stack for cutting, steam press one fabric, place the second fabric on top of it, and press again, repeating until you have stacked as many fabrics as you feel comfortable cutting at once. Ironing the fabrics together with steam helps them kind of cling to each other, resulting in more precise pieces.
Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making pillowcases and creating smiles. For people who love to sew or quilt, it's so easy to lift spirits and bring smiles to hospitalized kids, homeless families, and others in need. Simply join American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine's 1 Million Pillowcase Challenge. Make one, two, or more pillowcases and donate them in your local community. You'll create just as many smiles. Join the movement today. Find complete details, download free patterns, and record your donations online at allpeoplequilt.com/million pillowcases.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I'm talking to Amory Chaney of Gen X Quilters, and we are talking about samplers. So one of the things now, Amory, after you have like made blocks, and maybe you're making them, you know, randomly, you don't really have a layout yet, you are so good at coming up with some unique and amazing layouts. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of times when we think of traditional samplers, we kind of get stuck in this thinking that when you put your blocks together, it ends up being a grid. You know, the three columns by four rows make 12 blocks, and you just put them in that 3x4 grid. But when I started designing some Block of the Month programs, I was looking for some ways to change that up and try and make it more exciting. There's so much more we can do with the concept of samplers without just defaulting back to the grid that we normally see. So what I do, I guess I would consider maybe a little bit modern traditional. Mm-hmm. I really love traditional quilt blocks. I mean, there are so many fantastic ones out there. There's just not enough time in the day to make them all. But when I go to set them, I want to do something a little exciting, you know, make it visually something new that people haven't really seen before. So some of my sampler layouts tend to have a little bit more negative space, I have a couple of them where the settings are more on a diagonal, and they all use traditional blocks, but you know, I just try to do something different. For my latest one, the block of the month that I ran in 2015 is called the Moccasin Sampler. That one, I actually took another traditional quilt block and used that quilt block as the framework for the setting of the quilt. So if you can think of it, it's set inside the Sister's Choice block, or like the Japanese X and Plus. So you have that main framework of the quilt is the layout, and then you put your sampler blocks inside, you know, either that plus or that X, and it kind of gives you something exciting to look at when you're setting up your sampler.
Well, that is a spectacular quilt. Just
Thank
knock
you.
Your socks off.
I call that my fourth child right now. That is my absolute favorite quilt I have done in the past 10 years.
And everybody, you can see that if you go under her tab called Block of the Month. So that one is down there. Now, Emery, you have written a book called Sister Sampler Quilts, Three Modern Sampler Quilts with Paired Sister Blocks. So tell me about the concept.
Yes. So this is obviously expanding on my love of samplers. The book is a collection of blocks. It has 25 traditional blocks, and the blocks are laid out into chapters where each chapter lets you put your blocks in a different unique sampler setting. So there are three different samplers included with the block with the book. But the really fun part is that you get to make the blocks as sister blocks.
So what does that mean, make them as sister blocks?
Yes, so this is the really fun and just the part that I guess makes my heart sing is this is the sister concept. All of the samplers in the book have you making not just one block for the samplers, but you make two blocks for you make two of each block for the sampler, and you make them in these pairs called sisters.
Okay.
So when we work through the samplers and you make one block at a time, you know, you're working through the skills, you're learning new things, but sometimes when you only make one, there's something that you would go back and change, you know, something that didn't quite work out or didn't quite happen the way you were thinking. So by creating these samplers and allowing you to make two of each block, when you go back and make the second block, you have the opportunity to make that same block again and try and improve upon, you know, whatever it is that you weren't happy with the first time around. So maybe it was your fabric selection or your color, or, you know, you wanted this part of the block to pop and that didn't quite happen in the first one. So by repeating that, you get that chance to, you know, kind of have that instant learning without having to, again, make numerous number of blocks. Now, I know sometimes since there are two of the blocks in the samplers, you could go through and make those as identical twins. You could make your blocks exactly alike. And I had a student who did that in one of my classes, and her sampler turned out absolutely gorgeous. But what I try to encourage people to do is to use that second block as an opportunity for yourself to learn. Because I really do feel like every time I make another quilt or another block, you're always learning. So if you use that second block as like an immediate chance to learn on something that you just did, I think it, you know, it just helps that person grow. And then having two different blocks called sisters, you know, making them unique makes it seem like, well, that's how sisters really are. No sister, no two sisters are exactly alike. They're always, you know, a little bit different. So
a little bit different.
Kind of a fun,
so are
fun
people sewing along with you for the book and doing this with a friend and trading those second blocks? What are you seeing happening?
Yes, yes. So for 2016, the block of the month that I am running on my website does run from the book. And we're making the third quilt from the book. It's called the Bonfire Sampler. And in that activity, it's optional, but I'm encouraging people to pair up with a sister. And, you know, it doesn't have to be your literal sister. I only have a brother. I don't have any true sisters. But you can pair up, you know, with a friend, your mom, your daughter, your grandmother, your aunt, and, you know, anyone else who also quilts. And since you're making two of each block as you go along, you can trade those blocks. So in the end, you would end up with one of your blocks that you made and then one block that was made by your partner. And the sister blocks become sister quilts. So you end up with two quilts in the end. You
Yay.
Keep one, half of the blocks are made by you, half of the blocks are made by your quote-unquote sister. And
yes.
it's a really cool way to make samplers like a social activity because it's fun to work with a partner and, you know, sentimental at the same time.
I like that. I like that. Now I need to get a sister. That's
Yeah, for my version of the quilt, I asked my mom to come along and co-host the Block of the Month with me on my website. And I actually taught her to quilt about 5 years ago, around the same time that I started up my website. And mm-hmm. she's made a lot of the different patterns that I've had, but we've never collaborated before. So it's been really fun, you know, getting together and picking out fabrics together and showing each other our blocks. And it's just a really fun way to add that social element into quilting.
So how big are the blocks in the book?
Yeah, but the books has all of the blocks are offered in two different sizes. So you can make either a series of 9-inch finished blocks mm-hmm. or 12-inch finished blocks. And so then that kind of translates to your choice of being able to make a large or a small quilt. And so I kind of like that. Sometimes samplers and Block of the Month programs in general just have huge, gigantic quilts mm-hmm. that are really draining on the budget. So yeah. I really like having the option of making, you know, in the 9-inch blocks are relatively small and it ends up being maybe like a throw size quilt.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's nice because you can really control your budget that way, but yet still be a part of the experience and, you know, all of the learning without having to shell out the big bucks.
Yeah. So what does your stash look like? What kind of fabric do you have a lot of fabric? Do you have like a lot of small pieces? You know, what is it like? What is your fabric collection like?
Well, my fabric collection is pretty diverse because I don't know if I'm a hoarder, but I can't seem to part with anything. So I have some fabric that is 10 years old, and I'm sure a lot of other people's stashes look like this too. You know, you start mm-hmm. off, when I first started, I was very traditional. That was what the local shops were carrying.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of before, you know, all of the modern stuff really mm-hmm. exploded. So I have a lot of traditional things. And then it kind of morphs as time goes on into a little bit more of a modern collection with a lot of, yeah. you know, like tone on tones and solids and things like that. So, I don't know what I'm going to do with some of the fabrics that I might not necessarily be interested anymore, but I just can't seem to part with those.
So that would be for your sister's quilt.
Ever growing.
You could make that second quilt with those fabrics. So do you keep little tiny pieces? Are you like that because of the samplers or not?
Yes, I keep all my scraps too.
This is the true confession show.
Better,
did you
though.
Know
it's
that, Anne Marie?
More than a 2x2-inch square, I have decided I have to part with that because I'm really not going to go back and use those. If it's
yeah.
really small, I decided I do need to get rid of those.
I'm sure somebody will take them if you like have a local group. You know, you could just take that bag there with your eyes closed and give it to them.
Right. That will be the hardest part. You know, because
yes.
whenever you purchase something, you always have, you know, a project in mind or I really like this because, and there's just not enough time to sew all the things we want to sew. So inevitably some things get set aside. But then when it's time to try and turn those over, it's like, oh, I was planning on using that for this certain quilt 5 years ago, you know.
Oh. Well, Anne Marie, this has been so much fun. I really appreciate you coming on and talking samplers with me today.
Oh, thank you. It has been a lot of fun.
Yeah. And everybody needs to look for Anne-Marie Cheney's book, Sister Sampler Quilts, and visit her website, genxquilters.com. I'm Pat Sloan for American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. Come back next week and we'll have an all new show. And in the meantime, visit us at allpeoplequilt.com and you can come out and visit me at patsloan.com.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio.